Coming up on this edition of RCN Sports Talk. Football stories experts recap the Eagles-Redskins game and forecast the road ahead for both teams. Plus, Eagles linebacker Brian Braman and Dave Spadaro from Eagles Insider give their takes and insights ahead of Sunday's Saints game. And who should be blamed for the Eagles' 1-3 start? These and other sports topics and local features coming up on today's edition of RCN Sports Talk, brought to you by the Vinart Dealership, your Lehigh Valley Acura, Honda, Hyundai dealers.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to RCN Sports Talk. I'm Chris Michael. We're so glad you could be with us this evening. A lot of NFL talk on tonight's program. We'll be talking about the Redskins-Eagles games last week and a whole host of topics with some very special guests joining us on the phone lines throughout tonight's program and also in the studio. So let's introduce our guests leading off the program here from the RCN Sports Department, star of the Friday football program, Mr. Dennis Lobb, and from Football Stories, the magazine, and now the radio show on 610 ESPN Radio in the Delaware Valley, Mr. Rock Hoffman. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us this evening. I got to start right off the bat because we're going to be going into a lot of specifics and individuals and areas about the Eagles and later about the Redskins as well. But what has gone wrong? Who's to blame for the Eagles' mess right now? I mean, I remember a month ago we were talking about they're going to the Super Bowl. They're going to win 12, 13 games. Who's most responsible for this 1-3 start? And I'll give you four possible choices, but you can take this in any way you want. But I got the players who Chip Kelly threw under the bus a few days ago before now backpedaling. Chip Kelly, the head coach. Chip Kelly, the general manager. Or Jeffrey Lurie, the owner, for handing the keys to his organization off to a coach that had only had 2 years of NFL experience. So who gets the majority of the blame? And Rock, we'll start off with you.
Well, I'm going to absolve Jeffrey Lurie. I mean, he's not the first owner to do what he's done. So I'll give him a pass. Chip Kelly, the GM, has not done a very good job of, especially on the offensive line. So that is a big part of it. The players somewhat, I mean, they are not performing. The offensive line has been a disaster. Some, injuries. The defense, I think, has done, by and large, a pretty good job. But then Sunday, when everybody in America knew what the Redskins were going to do, they were going to milk the clock, that they didn't make a play has to be disheartening if you're an Eagles fan that, everybody knows what they're doing and they still did it to them. And then Chip Kelly, the head coach, I think, gets the biggest part of the blame. He came out with a quote saying, "Well, we're two missed field goals from being 3-1. Well, that to me is loser talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dennis, I asked you this question about an hour ago. I'm hoping you're changing your answer because I didn't agree with it. But go ahead, fire away, answer this question. Who's to blame?
I'm going to counteract Rock here. I'm blaming Jeffrey Lurie. You handed this guy just because he felt he had some kind of leverage in this thing by – either the Texas job or the Florida job offering me $10 million. We need to get rid of Howie Roseman, and I need to control everything about this. I need to get the players. I need to be the head coach. I need to be the offensive coordinator. And Jeffrey Lurie was dumb enough to buy into it. In his third year, to be handed that much power, just knowing what kind of snub type guy he is, I don't agree at all with I'm throwing it right at Jeffrey Lurie because he's the one that evidently he's the last say to get rid of his buddy Howie Roseman, his handpicked buddy, and give all this power to Chip. Obviously he can't do it. Can't do it all.
And I will agree with you. I think that is generally in the NFL a recipe for failure because we haven't seen too many coach GM types succeed. Look at the Giants. They won a couple of Super Bowls. They have Tom Coughlin, that coach, had a general manager. Right. And, I guess maybe the Patriots might be a little bit of a
exception,
but Bill Belichick always has a guy, his player personnel guy that he kind of hand picks. Yeah. Now maybe they should have let Chip picked somebody he really trusted, but then again, he hasn't been around long enough maybe in the NFL to have anybody to trust, but he's always been a very, self-centered guy, and I don't mean that negatively, but just he's on himself first, last, and only.
And it seems that they needed someone to kind of counterbalance. Now, the whole Marcus Smith, how that kind of fell out last year, the complaint was, or the word was, there was too many people going back and forth. So that was probably part of Chip's argument to take complete control. But it seems like he has one way of thinking, and there's no saying, all right, well, what if, or what's plan B, or, you're a tight of LeSean McCoy, you want to get rid of him, what do you do next? I think that Marco Murray was more of a reaction was, okay, we lost this franchise running back, we've got to quick go out and find someone else.
If the guy's available. And I think this Evan Mathis deal, I'm not a Twitter, I'm not a Facebook guy, but it's been shown time and time again. The guy had showed his flight ticket to Philadelphia. He was ready to come and report. And as soon as you see that, we're jettisoning the guy and toss him aside. And what has filled in for him, and Ehrman's obviously, like Rock said, hasn't worked.
Yeah, and the thing, too, about that is they had the leverage. I mean, Evan Mathis had to come in.
Yeah,
there were, if he doesn't walk, he ends up taking less money, so as it is. But they had all the leverage, and he just said, "All right, you don't want to be here, fine."
Yeah,
and he lost all that leverage too. And that's where I think a smarter businessman running the organization would have been better to run through things through.
And
this
if
off-season.
You recall, Andy Reid had a similar situation early in his career with Jeremiah Trotter.
Yes,
they had put the franchise tag on Jeremiah Trotter, and apparently, from what I recall, he and Trotter were having a meeting. I guess words were said, and Andy said, "You know what? We're removing the franchise tag," which immediately made him an unrestricted free agent. He signed with the Redskins, which turned out not to work so well for them and him. But then he came back and had a pretty successful career with the Eagles.
Yeah. And the big immediate question now is: Do you have confidence in Chip Kelly to turn the corner now? Do you think he can right the ship and still have success? Because you look at the schedule. There's certainly some winnable games, you would think, coming up the next month or 6 weeks.
Well, I thought this first stretch was going to be a pretty easy stretch. But of course,
they were going to be 8-0, right?
That last time I was here, I said that. Yeah, they got an easy stretch to start the season. So, I guess, one week at a time in the NFL, as the cliche goes. But right now, Sunday, he looked bewildered, Chip, on the sideline. Al and I always used to joke that when Wade Phillips was the coach of the Cowboys, he always kind of had that look on his face like he was going out to the mall parking lot looking for his car, didn't know where his car was. Chip kind of had that look on Sunday. So that's kind of, is he questioning himself?
Yeah. Yeah. Dennis, how about you? Do you think he can right the ship? And will he be around after this year?
Yes, he can right the ship. Mm-hmm. Will he right the ship? I'm not so sure. Will he be around next year? No, because Charlie Strong is getting kicked out at the University of Texas, and those people down there are used to winning and winning big, and they will throw big money at Chip Kelly. And if Chip Kelly continues, now he has changed after he, quote unquote, threw his players under the bus. He then went back, and now all of a sudden he's to the adage of, a la Andy Reid, we have to do a better job calling plays and do a better job with our defense. It's like, did Jeffrey Lurie or did somebody, get in his ear and say, wait a minute here, you're really starting to lose this room fast. I would say that he won't be around next year, but he does have a shot to write it, no doubt.
All right, we'll take a break right now. Coming up, we have Dave Spadaro from PhiladelphiaEagles.com. Also, Al Thompson from Football Stories, the creator and editor-in-chief, and also Brian Brayman of the Philadelphia Eagles coming up on tonight's program. But our first feature of the evening, the Whitehall Field Hockey team has not only posted impressive numbers so far this fall, but they've also started accomplishing some lofty goals. Our Sports Talk camera stopped by the Zephyrs facility to get the details on their success.
So far, it's been a great season. Coach Bodner has done a lot for us. She's been teaching us a lot. It's been a learning process to have a new coach, but it's been a great one.
Initially leaving the program 3 years ago was a very tough decision, but I did it to spend more time with my two young sons, so I'd never regret that decision. But I'm extremely excited for the opportunity to come back. The girls are working really, really hard, and this is just a great place to work and coach.
One of our goals would be to make it to states this year, because we haven't the past 3 years, but Coach Bodner, who just came back, she made it to states the year before she left. So that's one of our goals too.
We're winning a lot of close games, which is good. We're staying in games. We're being competitive in every game. The girls are working really hard.
We've had a great outcome. 11-1 is pretty awesome to be at this point in the season. Next week we have Parkland, we have Emmaus, we have a lot of good teams that we know are good competition for us, and it's definitely challenging. We're looking forward to playing Emmaus again because we did get to play them once. We did lose, and they are a great competition and a great team to play against. It's been a great start. Girls are working hard. We're definitely putting in the effort, and I think we're going to go far this year.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, talking Eagles, Redskins, NFL conversations on tonight's program. In studio, Dennis Slob and Rock Hoffman from Football Stories, the radio program, and also the magazine. We'll talk about his fine publication in just a little bit. But right now, our special guest is joining us on the phone lines, the first of two special guests via the phone lines tonight, Dave Spadaro from PhiladelphiaEagles.com. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, it's our pleasure. And Dave, of course, you know, people have been following you for many years. You've kind of mastered every possible media vehicle there is covering the Eagles over the last 15 or 20 years, and even a pioneer in a few of them. So thank you so much for your time here tonight.
My pleasure. Thank you.
The Eagles, of course, we've seen some stretches of success so far this year. I want to go back to the Sunday game and just kind of get your thoughts, because I was talking to several people in the Washington area prior to that game, and they were negative on just about everything. Kirk Cousins was going to be running out of town, and the offensive line had question marks. Did the Redskins overachieve on Sunday? Did the Eagles kind of play them up a little bit by underachieving at times? Or what was your assessment of both the Redskins and the Eagles based on what you saw on Sunday?
Kind of the way it's gone against the Redskins, good NFC East game. I think the Eagles obviously didn't play a very good game, in my opinion. But Washington played really well. And to go 90 yards down the field in the last, 6 minutes of the game, I mean, that's really impressive. So hats off to them. They did a wonderful job, and I think the Eagles blew it in a lot of different ways, missed field goals, dropped passes, et cetera. And it was a very tough loss for the team.
Your thoughts on Kirk Cousins? Again, a lot of people down there had kind of written him off, and yet...
I mean, he's a very functional quarterback when you give him time, and the Eagles couldn't generate a pass rush, and that's kind of been the whole problem. They haven't been able to really generate much of a pass rush at all.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised by that last drive? I mean, the Eagles' defense had been playing well, but at the same token, they had been on the field so long.
I didn't think they played that well. Mm. I'm so tired of hearing about the defense on the field so long. They gave up the first drive of the game. They gave up points. They gave up points in the first drive of the game, and they gave up points in the second drive of the game, and they gave up points after the Eagles were 13-13.
Yep.
So get off the field. I mean, what happens with it? And I think Chip Kelly's right now. It's everybody. It's every single person on this team, every player. They're just not, they're just not finishing the job. They've had two fourth quarter leads this year, and in Atlanta and in Washington. And they lost both of them, and that's just not the formula to win championships and to get to the playoffs and all that stuff.
Yeah. Guys?
Dave, just a kind of a general NFL question. This is Rock Hoffman, by the way. We know the Eagles struggled last year in short yardage situations, and it just seems like throughout the league that short yardage situations are difficult for teams to convert now for whatever reason. Do you have a theory?
I think offensive lines are really, really struggling. And I read so many things about it, Rock, and is it the lack of physical play in the preseason, in the offseason? I don't know. I've always believed that defenses will always catch up to offenses, and that's why they keep changing the rules. And so, I'm going to stick with that. I just think offense. The line of scrimmage is a totally different game than it used to be. It's not real impressive anymore. It's a very, the best team right now, the Carolina Panthers have been together a bit. amazingly, though, I mean, to throw my theory right out the window, the Atlanta Falcons threw their group together in a week, and look at that team. So it's just a weird – it's almost – I'll go with this one. The NFL these days is all about, you know, the preseason extends deep into September. That seems to be a fairly reasonable explanation.
Yeah, Dave, Dennis Lobb here. Just a question about the offensive line of the Eagles. Jason Peters, what percentage do you think that he may play this weekend, and why do you think they would move their right guard out to left tackle during a game when you have a guy like Dennis Kelly, who's his first year in the league, played a lot of tackle? Why would you
move? I think they don't think that Dennis Kelly has the range to play on the edge. So that's that answer, I think. They really made him a guard. Even though he's big and long, he just doesn't have the speed to handle the edge. And Jason Peters was a full participant in practice today. That's really good news.
Yes.
As was Lane Johnson. So it's encouraging, and hopefully they can play and play the entire game. It's really been – you notice how different the offensive line is when your left tackle's not at a Pro Bowl level. It really, really hurts your team big time.
Yeah, since you mentioned some injured players, Akiko Alonso, I know some news came out that the injury's not as serious as some had feared. Was there any more word on that?
Yeah, it wasn't an ACL. There was no damage to his ACL, apparently, and so he's in rehab right now. It was kind of a lateral issue, and that's encouraging. I don't know really anything other than that, and other than hoping to get Kiko back maybe after the bye week.
How serious is Maxwell's injury?
He practiced all the way today, so I think he'll be good to go on Sunday also.
That's good news.
Yep. You know, speaking of the injuries, I know – fans like to say, well, injuries aren't an excuse, but really when you look at the injuries they've had at linebacker, safety, the offensive line, do they kind of excuse the slow start and the 1-3 start and say, you know, we've lost so many people at this point, we can't expect to be 3-1? I don't think so, no. Really?
I think you got to play with what you have and do that. So, I don't buy into the excuses thing. You've got to have depth. You've got to have all that. And the Eagles haven't shown that depth.
Hey, Dave, it's Al Thompson here. Long time no talk to. Just going back to the offensive line thing, and that's, you know, a big point that a lot of people are making is that, I know it's a sore subject, but Evan Mathis, whoever's fault it was, they don't have him. You know, I know Evan Mathis was the bonehead about it, and he kind of forced the Eagles' hand, so to speak. But not having him there went against, I think, a lot of the plans that Chip Kelly had for this season. How much has that affected the offense, not having that one spot?
I think Chip said the other day that he thought that Alan Barber has graded out pretty well. So I don't know. I think the right guard position has been a trouble.
That's what I meant.
I think that left guard has been okay. I think that left tackle has been a problem. I don't think Lane Johnson has played particularly well, and clearly – I don't think that Jason Kelce has played as well as he had hoped to play. So,
and speaking with the theme of being positive, Malcolm Jenkins, I think he's done a great job. Would I be out of line in saying that he might be the MVP of the defense through the first 4 weeks of the season?
I think we lost Dave there.
Am I lost Dave?
Yeah. But I don't think you're wrong at all. I think he's really been a leader. He's been able to kind of hold the fort, so to speak.
Yeah.
That's, you know, the defense has been, you know, pretty consistent throughout all four games except for the first half against Atlanta. They've Dave was saying that, you know, that wasn't a good drive at the very beginning of the last week against Washington. They didn't get off the field quickly. They let Washington get some momentum there, and it's not a good thing. So but overall they have been, you know, and again, but going back to it, they had so many injuries in that game. Brandon Bear went out. They lost Taylor Hart, didn't even play. Keegan Alonso's out. Fletcher Cox actually missed part of that game. I mean, then you had, of course, Byron Maxwell had to leave the game for most of it. So you had a lot. I mean, you had a mash unit out there, and they still kind of held their own.
You know, when he went out, it seemed like the defense almost played better without Maxwell. I don't know if I'm just being a cynic here because people have been on him for the first for his poor play the first 3 weeks of the season. It seemed that they seemed to play more cohesive after he left, right?
I was just about injuries. Everybody has injuries, so I don't think that can be an excuse.
Yeah.
So let's just, you know, nip that in the bud now.
But you still lose five or six players during the game. That's a lot of players.
But
and
when
next
you
man
only
up. Well, that's the motto of the NFL, isn't it? Next man up.
You only let your offense on the field for six plays. Now, granted, they weren't very successful.
No.
First quarter, they had six plays of offense. That means your defense is letting some things go on with the time. And, you know, they say about the time ratio, and it's, you know, two-thirds defense, one-third offense, and we go fast, fast, fast. But still, when you're only able to run six plays, your defense is to blame also.
Well, and they have to feed off of each other. I mean, if you look at successful teams, good defense breeds good offense and vice versa. So that's not happening here. The offense is specializing in the three and out. They're not very good on third down right now, so they're putting the defense back out there. So the defense, we got to go back out here and save the offense.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing I wanted to ask Dave, and I wanted to ask you guys as well, because you guys are in the locker room. The DeMarco Murray situation, he came out after the game on Sunday and said, I need more touches. Not quite the Jonathan Papelbon, I didn't come here for this, but a kinder, softer version of saying, you know, I want to see some things improving. I want to get the ball a little bit more. I think he's only gotten the ball 20 times. Last year, this time, he had the ball 97 carries at this point, four weeks into the season. Are they on a clock with him? Are we at a point where if they don't start finding a way to get him more touches and more carries, where he's going to start saying, hey, you know what, I didn't come here for this, I'm out of here, I'm checking out, and we start seeing some more divisiveness among those in the locker room?
I don't think he's that kind of a player. I don't think he's that kind of a guy. He's not a Papelbon kind of guy. Mm. This guy is going to be an executive somewhere when he's done here. He's a guy with a lot of dignity and a lot of class that I've seen so far. And I think that someone asked him a question, and it was a legitimate question. I'm glad he said it. Of course he wants the ball more. He's getting paid. You know, Rock and I talk sometimes about this, that the salary doesn't matter, but the Eagles have invested a lot of money in him, a lot of coin, and he's barely getting the ball. Eight touches in that game was kind of ridiculous when you think about it. And that's not his fault. He doesn't dial up his own number. And he had a great run in the first quarter, a 30-yarder, and they just didn't dial his number. And that goes back to coaching. I think when you get down to it, it all goes back to Shermer and to Kelly about what they're going to do as far as being creative again. I mean, with that first year he was here, they'd hit some wild stuff that was really entertaining. It was effective. And they
and
had
even
just
when it didn't work, people were willing to give him credit for at least trying something.
Yeah, and he's not a very creative coach right now. Nothing that the Eagles do is creative at all. Yeah. And very uncharacteristic of what we thought we were going to get when he came here.
He had that reputation as kind of a gunslinger type of guy and throw it against the wall and see what sticks. And, you know, not much is sticking right now.
Do you guys think this running back by committee will work long term? Because you look back in NFL history, there's not a great a laundry list of teams that had success by having two, three different backs and working them interchangeably.
Yeah, you got to remember one thing, though. I mean, Murray was out. He was hurt, legitimately hurt. Game number three. Probably didn't practice much before that game, so his touches was down. Just so happened Matthews, you know, had a decent game against the Jets, so he didn't get the carries. But, you know, getting back to what Al was saying, I'll never forget the first half of his first game down in Washington. It was just like, oh, my God. Chip Kelly was doing all kinds of crazy stuff, and it was just like, bang, I'm here. Mm-hmm. And everybody just started drinking the Kool-Aid and just assumed that it was going to, that magic carpet ride was going to continue to ride. And it's been rather standard fare right now, his play selection this year. And he's probably trying to kickstart a DeMarco Murray, and he's not, he's an eye back more kind of running back instead of a guy that's getting it out of the shotgun. And it's he's trying to get him going, but it's just not working.
Yeah. And I think also there's a book on Chip Kelly that, you know, there was no NFL book on Chip Kelly that first season. And now there is one. So NFL teams, like Dave said, defense catches up to offenses. Maybe the NFL has caught up to Chip Kelly a little bit. And now he's got to go back and adjust.
Remember when the Wildcat came in vogue and it was so effective and everybody started having copycatting it and mm-hmm. having some of the Wildcat in their offense. And Kelly, I think, was the Wildcat. He was just not that specific play, of course, but he was something new. And a lot of people have emulated a lot of things he's done. And like Rock was saying, was that some of the NFL has caught up to him, but he is supposed to readjust. And I think also, when you think about it, they've changed six starters on offense in the offseason. Are we asking too much this early? Because if you look at this past game, actually Sam Bradford had four touchdown passes. He had one called back. It was a great throw, great catch by Zach Ertz in the first half that was taken away. That had the penalty had nothing to do with the play, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So he would have had four touchdown passes if Kalib Sturgis makes that field goal. We're not even talking like this. We're saying the Eagles are back. They're back on track or whatever. So let's see what happens this week against New Orleans and see if Bradford, because he looked great in the second half. He looked mobile. He was running the ball. He was throwing the ball downfield. Mm-hmm. They connected on some great long passes. I mean, you know you're connecting when Riley Cooper catches a 62-yard bomb behind the defense. And so.
Yeah, but I'm worried that that's their primary target downfield right now.
No, but it was there, so they took advantage
either
of it.
Either that or it's a huge indictment on the Washington Redskins' defensive backfield.
Yeah. Right. Our special guest in studio, Al Thompson, Rock Hoffman from Football Stories Magazine and the radio show, joined by Dennis Lobb and myself. Our thanks to Dave Spadaro for joining us. He is involved in a couple different events this evening, so our thanks to Dave for joining us for a few minutes. And coming up, we'll have Brian Brayman from the Philadelphia Eagles right after this timeout.
This is the RCN Sports Talk Podcast. Interact with us by sending us your sports comments, questions, and opinions right now or anytime via email to rcnsportstalk@rcn.com. And we may read and respond to your emails on an upcoming program. That's rcnsportstalk@rcn.com. Give and get sports opinions by visiting our sports blogs at rcn.com/rcntv, where you can also get updates on sports news and features on teams in the RCN coverage area. Stay tuned. The RCN Sports Talk podcast resumes in 60 seconds. Just seconds. Don't forget, you can send us your feedback and sports comments and questions at any time by emailing us at rcnsportstalk@rcn.com. Or speak with us directly on air during the program's live airing on RCN TV starting at 7 p.m. on Thursday evenings at 1-844-234-4488. Now, here's more of the RCN Sports Talk podcast.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, talking Eagles, Redskins, and NFL discussions. On tonight's program, our in-studio guests, Dennis Lobb, Rock Hoffman, and Al Thompson from Football Stories Magazine and the radio show, which we'll be talking about that new radio show coming up in just a little bit. Right now, though, our special guest on the phone lines from the Philadelphia Eagles, Brian Braman. Brian, thanks for joining us this evening.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's our pleasure. I know you were very busy with meetings all afternoon in practice. I just want to get your thoughts, though. Obviously, one of the things that you've noticed in tapes and getting ready for the game against the Saints on Sunday, the Saints special teams has not been a strong area, and that's one of the areas where the Eagles can point to as having a lot of success. And, of course, Darren Sproles, of course, with his returns. But all you guys have been doing a nice job in the coverage team. Let's talk a little bit about special teams and what's kind of your goals heading into the Saints game on Sunday.
Well, you know, we're obviously preparing for the Saints as you know, them being a good football team. They are a good football team, and, you know, it's sometimes things don't work out, and, you know, the start of the season never really happens the way, you know, you picture it. But, you know, they're a good football team, and obviously we did some things last year, but, you know, we're going out there to put them in the ground. You know, we're definitely excited to continue, you know, getting better every week. That's the way that we obviously came into the week preparing, understanding that, you know, it doesn't matter who you're facing at any given time in this league, you can win or lose. So we're just making sure that we get our mind right and set, ready to go to get us a W.
The linebacking core is one of those areas that have been hit hard by injuries, and some different people have been rotating in. Has it been tough trying to build some chemistry and cohesiveness among the linebackers with different people out there and a lot of shifting going on? Because of injuries, not because of any design, but because of injuries?
You know, I think we got a close group of guys. I don't think there's really anything that you can do about injuries. We all understand that, you know, it's all part of the game. You know, we all sign up knowing that it's 100% injury rate. So really it's just making sure that we go out there and have fun and just understand how each of us play, you know, really understand, you know, one guy plays this way, then we can play out this way. You know, really coaches say, you know, just you got to know your customer. If you're out there on the field with somebody, really just, you know, understand how they're going to play so that way you can really kind of play off of them and basically, you know, help each other out.
Mm-hmm. Brian, yeah, this is Al Thompson from Football Stories. I've walked by you 100 times in the locker room.
Yeah, what's up, man?
Just talk a little bit about Chip Kelly. And from what I understand, he spends an inordinate amount of time coaching special teams. That is his thing, his pet, you know, projects every day. Can you talk about how much detail he spends on special teams and bringing you guys in, Maragos in? I think it was part of that plan, wasn't it?
You know, he definitely wanted to make an emphasis on it. And some of the key acquisitions that he made through the free agency the last couple of years obviously shows that he shows a big importance towards special teams. You know, it is the third phase of the game. Sometimes it is forgotten from, you know, punt and punt return and stuff like that until really a punt's blocked, and it really plays a key factor in whether or not the game is decided between win and loss. So, you know, Chip really, you know, really, really likes to put a big emphasis on it as far as, you know, the understanding, you know, the momentum and the change that it can really make, you know, the equalizer that it can be in the game as far as offense and defense, whether one or the other is struggling.
And I understand that the Darren Sproles, as a punt returner, seems to have knowledge of every single punter in the league, and he can tell from the minute the ball leaves the guy's foot, he seems to be able to measure exactly what he's going to be able to get back on that. Can you talk about having Darren Sproles there? He's almost like an extra coach, isn't he, when it comes to punt returns?
You know, he's really actually kind of quiet. I'd say he's just somebody that really, you know, that he's going to be there, really reliable, dependent, you know, independent. You know, you can really depend on him to make sure that he's going to do the same thing over and over again, you know. The way you see him run them punts back in the games, you know, under the lights, you know, scoring touchdowns. So he does that every day in practice. You know, he shows up every day in and out. He's, you know, catching balls and he's scoring on everyone. It doesn't matter you know, if it's a walkthrough, he's full speed scoring on it. So it's a lot of fun being able to go out there knowing that you're blocking for somebody like that. It really makes you step your game up and really want to actually, you know, help him get there knowing that he's willing to put in all that work.
And Josh Huff had given him credit when he ran back one, I think, preseason last year. He said that it was that Sproles had told him about it. But this week, I mean, is this especially, you know, in the situation the Eagles are in, nobody wants it that way. The fans don't, observers don't, you guys obviously don't. You guys going into this week with just an extra foot to the pedal about special teams making an impact this week?
Yeah, you know, we've been preparing for them as they're a real good squad, you know, just as they're the best special teams unit in the league. And, you know, that's just the way that we prepare. And we understand that we can play just as much of a part in it. This is it right here. Just as much of a part in it as much as the offensive defense can.
Hey, Brian, this is Dennis Lobb. I just, talking about fans, I noticed that you played collegiately in Texas and professionally down there. How are the fans different in Philadelphia compared to what you've experienced in the past?
Oh, man, it's been pretty crazy. you know, I used to like to think that the fans were pretty crazy in Houston, but I got up here to Philly, man, and they definitely straightened that out.
And that's got to be, you know, whether it's, you know, it's tough times right now or great times when you win the division and go to the playoffs, knowing that the fans are going to be there, they're going to be passionate no matter what. Like, that's got to feed into the players.
Brian,
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that?
No, I'm saying the fact that the fans are passionate. You know, are cities where when the team's not doing well, they're indifferent. They're just gone. Here, they're just as engaged as when the team is winning. That's got to be, I think, what a positive overall for you guys, right?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, that was definitely one thing that I noticed is, you know, in Texas, if you're losing, you know, you're gonna see a lot of empty seats. You're not gonna see very many fans showing their face or, you know, coming out to the game. Whereas in Philadelphia, it doesn't matter.
They may be unbolting the seats, you know.
burning up weather, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. But the
Brian Bannon, our special guest, been from the Philadelphia Eagles. You played in all 16 games last year, and there was a lot of turnover. What was that first few weeks of practice like, and what was it like trying to get everyone on the same page? Was it a little bit harder this year with so much turnover and so many new faces the first few weeks of training camp?
I really think everybody's just really kind of getting accustomed to it just because, you know, it's the game. Obviously, we understand that, you know, no team will ever be the same, you know, one year after another. So it's really just, you know, making sure that you're able to put the right guys in the locker room to where they're able to do the things that you want them to do.
One of those new faces, of course, was Kiko Alonso. And we just heard earlier on our show with Dave Spadaro that the injury is not as severe as what once was feared when it first happened. It's not the ACL. Does that kind of give you guys a lift emotionally, knowing that reinforcements are coming back and a guy that was supposed to be a huge part of the defense this year is not going to be lost for the season or lost for 6 to 8 weeks, but should be back sooner rather than later?
Yeah. You know, obviously you don't want to see somebody like that go down. You don't wish any ill will on anybody, especially one of your teammates. You know, obviously he's going to be a huge contributor in the defensive scheme of things. And it's definitely, you know, reassuring to know that obviously the young guys that step up are playing well and they're able to fill the spot when Kiko comes back. We obviously expect him to come back with a vengeance. Mm-hmm.
And what was it been like working with Marcus Smith the last year and a half? He was the number one draft pick of the team, which instantly gets put into the spotlight. A lot of attention gets thrust upon him. Have you talked much with him over the last year plus on just the ins and outs of being an NFL player and dealing with all that comes with being a top pick?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of guys that really just kind of try to take him under his wing. You know, it's a young guy. Sometimes people can deal with it a little bit better than others. Mm-hmm. But really, you know, everybody just kind of looks out for him. If he's got any questions, we're obviously there to try and help him out and point him in the right direction, and just, you know, obviously try to make it as easy as possible for him to make the transition. And, you know, you've seen a big change from last year to this year as far as his maturity level and the things that he's done. He's definitely gotten to be a much better football player than he was when he came in. So I'm definitely excited. I'm sure everybody else is kind of excited to see, you know, where he's able to go, because there's so much upside to him as far as being a football player and just, you know, making sure that we guide him in the right direction.
Brian, this is Rock Hoffman from Football Stories. Talk about your road to the NFL. Obviously, you know, a guy like that's a number one pick, has a lot of expectations, but you're a guy out of West Texas A&M, so not a football factory. So just talk about your road to the NFL.
Yeah, you know, obviously it was an unconventional road. Kind of paved my own way, as you were not normally, you know, somebody would just follow the yellow brick road that's laid out for them. But, you know, I went to the University of Idaho out of high school, played there for a year. Unfortunately, I didn't really buy into the academic side of things as far as the eligibility goes. So I failed out and really just went back home and kind of got a full-time job making concrete railroad ties. Back-breaking labor of mandatory overtime, you know, minimum wage, maybe $10 an hour. And really just got tired of it, wanted to go back to school, and went back to my high school counselor and asked him if there was anything that he could do to help me enroll in some classes so I could start working on my degree and everything like that through the community college there in Spokane. And he told me that he could definitely help me. And at the end of the meeting, he asked me if I was still interested in playing football. And at that time, I figured that my chance was over. You know, I really just kind of threw it away at the University of Idaho, failing out and stuff academically. And I told him, yeah, I was. And he came back to me the next day and said that he had an opportunity for me down in California. And I made my way down there, played 2 years at Long Beach City College, JUCO down there in Long Beach. And from there, I was actually recruited to West Texas A&M. They recruited me as an outside linebacker. I knew that if there was any chance of me being able to play in the NFL, that, you know, I was probably going to be a hybrid guy. So I had played the end my entire career up to that point. So I figured that, you know, I could get a head start on the whole transition from defensive end to outside linebacker. Went to West Texas A&M, and I played there for a year. Three games into my senior season, I actually got into a little bit of trouble. I was released or suspended from the team, and I was unable to finish my senior year. But through certain connections and just keeping my head up and really just making sure that I took all the right steps and the necessary steps to keep my name relevant when it came across the board, I got an invitation from the Houston Texans, and that was in 2011, right after the lockout. And I made my way down to Houston and really just told myself I wasn't going to give them any reason to say no. My name came across the board, whether to cut me or keep me. I made sure that they had to keep me. So,
yeah, that's an incredible story, Brian. And how did you end up modeling for Abercrombie?
You know, being down in Long Beach, really just being a poor college kid, tired of eating noodles, really wanted a job that wasn't physically demanding. And, you know, I was being approached by a lot of people on the streets. You know, I was walking around and stuff, you know, a lot of beach time, and you usually spend a lot of time without your shirt on. You know, you got some sunglasses on and a cool cut. And I was being approached by a lot of agencies asking me if I had modeled before, if I had any kind of like previous experience. And they, you know, told me that it was pretty easy to get involved with Abercrombie & Fitch. If you kind of fit the profile, you can walk into the store and they're pretty good at recruiting you. So I ended up in there, and from there it just turned into kind of the pursuit of the campaign, their marketing campaign, where, you know, you get to go on a 3-day, 4-night trip up in New York, and, you know, you basically with, you know, a group of other beautiful people, and you just get to have
wearing
fun
underwear
and take photos and stuff.
Before we let you go again on Sunday, not that to change the subject too much, but just getting back to football. Drew Brees, you're going to be facing him on Sunday. He was dinged up. Looked like he started to get some momentum back last week despite the loss. But your thoughts on facing him, and what do you have to do on defense to have success against Drew Brees?
Oh, man. You know, Drew Brees is Drew Brees. He's obviously got a Super Bowl under his belt. And, you know, he's been in the league for 15 years. He's one of the best in the business. You know, obviously, you know, household name. And our defense really just got to get after him, you know. We know that I believe it's his shoulder that's been kind of bothering him a little bit. And we've noticed that there's been quite a few check downs and stuff like that. You know, he's been taking what the defense has been giving him, and really just need to make sure that we're tight with our coverage, and we're trying to put as much pressure on him as possible, so that way he's got to make quick decisions with the ball and see if we can make something happen.
All right, Brian, thanks so much for your time. Best of luck on Sunday.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate you having me on the show.
It was our pleasure. Brian Braman, outstanding linebacker and special teams ace for the Eagles. Of course, we'll be playing the Saints on Sunday. We're going to take a break and be back with more football conversation in just a few moments. Right now, our final timeout feature of the evening. And the Freedom Boys soccer team has enjoyed a successful fall campaign, but they're still jockeying for postseason positioning. Videographer Alyssa Scheckler spoke with the Patriots players and head coach about their season and some big upcoming matchups.
The nucleus that's been together, I've had them for 4 years, obviously, but they've been together probably since they've been 7 or 8 years old. So they have aspirations of having a successful season, making it the postseason.
I trust everyone on the field, so we all trust each other. We play well, and all around the field, really, we know we can depend on each other.
We've had a pretty successful season. We've gotten a lot of good results against some good teams that are up there in the rankings, and we've put a lot of effort into every single game, gotten some good wins, and it's been a pretty successful season, especially in our league.
We're pretty much in the stretch run. Our steel division will be kind of decided based upon games this week. Based on the record we have, if we can do well, then we'll set up some postseason play.
No matter how good each team is, it's always a close game against Liberty. We always leave it all on the field. We give them a tough fight every single year, and we're looking to do that both times we play them this year. We have a lot of divisional games coming up, and they're all important to our playoff hopes.
We've been playing well so far, coming together as a team, 9 wins, qualified for districts. So that's one of our goals we met already. We want to make the league playoffs and win some playoff games, maybe ultimately win a championship, which we think we can do this year.
You are listening to the RCN Sports Talk podcast. Send us a comment or question, or to participate in the program, email us at rcnsportstalk@rcn.com, and we might read and respond on an upcoming episode. You can also send us possible show topics and future guest suggestions by emailing chris.michael@rcn.net. If you catch the show live, you can call us at 1-844-234-4488 on Thursday evenings between 7 and 8 p.m. That number again, 1-844-234-4488. Stay tuned for more of the RCN Sports Talk podcast. To the RCN Sports Talk podcast. Send us a comment or question, or to participate in the program, email us at rcnsportstalk@rcn.com, and we might read and respond on an upcoming episode. If you catch the show live, you can call us at 1-844-234-4488 on Thursday evenings between 7 and 8 p.m. Stay tuned for more of the RCN Sports Talk podcast.
Miss part of this evening's program or want to see one of our sports features again?
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Our special in-studio guests, Al Thompson and Rock Hoffman from Football Stories, the magazine and the radio show, which is now on 610 AM, formerly WIP, but you've taken over at the ESPN Radio, and that's on Wednesdays nights from 5 to 7 PM, correct?
That's correct.
All right. Joining Dennis Slob and myself, our thanks to Dave Spadaro from PhiladelphiaEagles.com for joining us earlier, as well as Eagles linebacker Brian Brayman for spending some time with us. All right. It is time for the roundtable, in which we have a variety of different topics to put before our panelists. Topic number one, what has been the bigger disappointment so far this year? The Nationals crashing and burning and not making the playoffs, let alone winning the World Series, which the Washington fans were expecting, as I was, or the Philadelphia Eagles so far with their 1-3 start?
I have to go with the Nationals. The Eagles still have a chance to rebound and have a decent season, and the Nationals have already crashed and burned.
Yeah. All right, Rock?
I think that's going to be the unanimous vote. I say Nationals as well, same reason as Al.
Well, tell that to all the people on the Ben Franklin Bridge who were jumping off the last couple of weeks here, too. Dennis, do you agree with the Nationals?
How can you go from the National League Manager of the Year to being fired? That,
but the Eagles were going to be going to the Super Bowl.
Obviously, it's a major disappointment. Yes. You know, we all bought into it, but...
All right, I'll re-ask this question in 6 or 7 weeks if the Eagles haven't won more than a couple games. Topic number two, should Major League Baseball keep the one-game playoff? Once and done, and, you know, I'll start with you. You're a Yankee fan. 3 hours after 7 months of hard work, 3 hours and your season comes to an end.
I am so glad that it's one and done because
really?
I've had it. The best thing about the Yankees this year was Joe Girardi. I felt he was the manager of the year. For the players that he had, how he got that many wins, I have no idea. But I'm glad it's over, that I only had to watch one and not suffer, you know, 2 out of 3 or 4 out of 7. Because they weren't beating anybody at the end.
I like the one-game playoff as well. I mean, it kind of brings that element of the NFL playoffs or the NCAA tournament into it a little bit.
They should make it longer or do something, spread it out somehow, because it just seemed like it went over too fast.
Very exciting game, but I think they should stop at the champagne and acting like they actually won something. It was a play-in game, for crying out loud. Stop at the champagne.
Yeah. That is borderline ridiculous overkill. Now.
Yeah. All right, topic number three. Interest level on a scale 1 to 10, we had the NBA season and the NHL season open up over the last couple days. How excited were you on a scale 1 to 10? Rock, we'll start with you.
1.
Oh, what? There was nothing else going on, right?
Well, the NBA is still preseason, right?
Yeah.
So I'm an anti-preseason guy.
Yeah, but we'll find out. Okafor getting out on the floor. They look pitiful, but still.
It's not until after football is over do you really kick into NBA and NHL and
Together
college
we build.
Basketball.
Together we build. It's coming soon. Next 7 or 8 years, the Sixers are going to be there. Al, how about
I'll
you?
I'll put it between a 3 and a 4, but the same reasons as Rock. It's still football, and it's hard to get. Get interested in it as much.
Yeah, I'm very low myself. They don't give out any trophies until, the end of spring, early summer. So why would we want to fall as football? So
well, there's hockey fans out there.
I'm sure there are, but,
All right, topic number four, and I ask this because in a lot of the cities that are 1-3 right now, they're saying, well, you have to give this team time. You have to give them a chance to build some cohesiveness and build some chemistry. Everyone's talking about how long the preseason is. If the preseason is too long, shouldn't it just be shorter or should it be expanded?
I think the NFL has to stop being in the middle with this. Either make a decision to play a preseason or don't. If you're going to play a preseason, play the games and get your starters out more. I think the Eagles would have benefited from Sam Bradford playing. He's fine, and it's almost like a form of paranoia with these clubs, a lot of them. Just play it or don't play it, one or the other. Make a decision.
Right.
Yeah, I was always under the theory that the first NFL regular season game was the least like the rest of the season, but now it's 2 or 3 games into the season. It's going to be less like the whole season. So the preseason games are meaningless. I mean, the Eagles are the Super Bowl champions of August.
Real quick, Dennis, thumbs up or thumbs down? Shorter or longer? Or keep it the same?
It'll never change.
You keep it afloat.
It'll never change because of money.
All right. My thanks to all of our guests on tonight's program. Don't forget to check out our podcast as well on the RCN TV website. Joe and Dennis tomorrow night starting at 6:30. I'm Chris Michael. Good night, everyone.